Hello, everyone, and welcome from here in the capital city of Austin, Texas. This is Capital Geek, a podcast dedicated to the founders and operators that create the products we love and turn them into fabulous companies with meaningful exits. Whether you're raising your first round of capital or racing toward an IPO, this is where we deep dive on the lessons learned from seasoned industry veterans, geeks of all types, the experts leading product and engineering teams, operations and finance, or sales and marketing, and we'll both learn from their mistakes and celebrate their successes while providing a roadmap for you to accelerate your own journey toward success. My name is Josh Stevens, CTO at Elsewhere Partners, and I am the Capital Geek. Today's guest is my good friend, fellow veteran, and sales leadership geek, Justin Indris. Justin's time in the Marine Corps and his almost 25 years of experience building and leading high-performance sales teams is a testament to his ability to lead teams to exponential results in spite of extraordinary conditions. This is destined to be one of my favorite episodes ever. So, without further ado, here's this week's episode of Capital Geek. My good friend, Mr. Indris, Justin, how are you today?
I am doing well. Thanks for asking. And you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for coming by to join the podcast. It's such an honor to always have you in the office, and I'm super excited about this conversation.
Without a doubt. Great to catch up, I guess, with our daily lives somewhat interrupted. it's been a while, yeah?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen anyone in person, but I miss seeing you in person, brother. So I'm glad to talk about this. You've mentioned our daily lives being interrupted, and when this, you know, as we release this podcast, it'll be very fresh, but a year from now, people may forget that we're dealing with coronavirus and, you know, the restart of the economy, people going back to the office, restaurants are now open again. I know it's probably been a challenge for you. Can you speak a little bit about how this has changed, how you lead your team and some of the things you're seeing?
Yeah, without a doubt. It's been interesting, right? Beyond things like, boy, it'd be nice to start hugging, you know, some buddies again and things like that. You know, I think when I look at it through the work lens, and I've spent a lot of time trying to, you know, maybe internalize all the things that could potentially change or that will change, peer around some of those corners, if you will, and kind of ready myself for what may be out there. But, you know, it's interesting when you think about this massive experiment, right? Moving from what may have been 15 or 25% of the workforce maybe working remotely from, you know, for some period of time, and now we're in the high 90s or something along those lines. It's been a transition that I think organizations who, you know, probably more lean towards the agility side, or, you know, think about how do we respond to things as opposed to react to things. I think they've dealt with this a lot better than others. And at the same point in time, you know, as we think about maybe this transition back into the office, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. But I think the most, you know, immediate thing that we've seen is, you know, kind of those, again, who have maybe prepared themselves and been nimble enough to I think execute through this. And I think we're going to see some people really take off on the other side. And certainly there's organizations for a variety of different reasons, some of them out of their control. But certainly I think they're going to struggle, and probably a lot of the larger companies out there are most impacted, right? I think, you know, maybe like you, a lot of times through that military lens. And I think about this notion of, you know, the information always being on the edge, or the information always being out amongst the troops, and how fast can that, you know, kind of move back and forth up and down the chain. And I think these larger organizations who are in a lot of ways probably calcified and don't know how to be as nimble as maybe some of these maybe, you know, even mid-market companies or mid-size, highly agile companies, I think there's a real opportunity to disrupt a lot of different areas of our lives. So it'll be interesting, right? But a lot of unknowns out there, and looking forward to addressing them as they come.
You know, you mentioned both of our prior military background, you within the Marine Corps and me within the Air Force. You know, I missed that time of my life, and I missed not only the camaraderie, but oftentimes that purity of mission, where no one's focused on promotions, no one's trying to gain a political edge over their coworkers. You know, it's really just all about the mission and the team, and that clarity of focus, it was so awesome, you know, in my time in the Air Force. And what I've noticed around this crisis is that a lot of organizations and a lot of teams were able to get back to that same clarity of mission, because, you know, under this amount of stress where we're literally worried about our families surviving and our friends getting through this, and it's more about who keeps a job than who gets promoted and how they advance in that position, it added that clarity. And among the teams I worked with, and, you know, there are a dozen or so I worked with a lot, what I've noticed is that there's been this coming together and focus that really I hadn't seen before. And I think as these teams find ways to maintain that focus as we exit the crisis and prepare, you know, to exit a recessionary period back toward a growth period in the economy, that really positions them with a distinct advantage over the companies that can't do that.
1,000%, right? I'm trying to think of what's, you know, one of the old sayings was, it was this notion in the Marine Corps of compasses over maps, and the notion of a map, you know, will give you kind of terrain and kind of a fixed idea of what's out there and what you'll need to address. But a compass allows you to kind of approach and react and respond to the changing elements, right? That's not something a map will give you. So you can't ever deviate, right? So I think, you know, as I think back to some of the most intimate, you know, personal Marine Corps lessons, as hard as they were to learn, I think they really do translate well. And, you know, I think the notion of teams is probably where you feel it the most, right? That's that notion of where everybody has to work in a very fluid or cohesive way. A lot of these go-to-market models that you think about today, right? You know, I've been fortunate to be part of them, but they really emphasize this notion of kind of a you know, decentralized autonomy or a meritocracy, right? And that notion of being able to, you know, partner with different departments and move very quickly because you have great people, right, who you trust in, who understand what the mission is, and they can make decisions very rapidly, right? I think, again, you know, the good fortune that maybe you and I have shared with some of the companies we've been with, I think will translate well. I think this will be a very, very difficult time for a lot of organizations, because there are so many new, you know, variations of what's going to be thrown at them, right? I think we're going to hear like words like there can be a lot of reorgs. And reorgs are just kind of moving people around on the bus. It's not really staring at the problem and trying to address it in a new way, right? It's going to be a lot of the same old tactics and strategies. And candidly, I think those are highly likely to fail, given we just live in a new world with new challenges, and at the same point in time, new opportunities. But couldn't agree more with, you know, I think the time and the lessons that maybe both of us and a lot of folks have taken away from their time in the military.
You know, in many cases when I see acquisitions happening out in the world and in the M&A market, when I see a competitor to a small company or a medium-sized company that I worked with get acquired by one of the behemoths, you know, I celebrate that, because usually it means that it sort of takes that player off the field in most competitive advantages. Maybe not right away, but within 18 months or 2 years, they tend to sort of fade away from the competitive market. And their focus is all around retaining their customers and sort of that sort of gross customer retention or gross dollar retention, because they really don't have a way to go out and grab new customers. They're no longer an exciting product. I think that this crisis accelerates that time frame in many cases, where the inability for really, really large companies to shift in an easy way, you know, is going to be magnified in some ways and be accelerated. And likewise for companies that are large, I don't mean to say that those companies can't do it, but the ones that are really good at it and are able to conquer, even at the super large company level, those are the companies that will excel and will grab huge market share.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. It's, you know, if folks, you know, really think through this, and again, despite all the challenges, right, you listen to the economists, nobody has any clue how challenging this will be to kind of claw our way out of. And we all fundamentally understand that the economy and the growth of the economy is critical, right? I mean, nobody invests in a pension to see it sit there. And so, you know, we have to make sure that the bar continues to be high growth, right? High learning type environment. But yeah, I agree entirely. But I think when we think about this reset, maybe the largest in, you know, the history of our economy, there is absolutely an opportunity to reinvent our businesses. I think organizations, you know, who have needed to maybe reinvent their culture, I think these are significant opportunities for them if they view it through that lens, right? Some will, some won't, we'll see. But this is an opportunity to really reset, recast, or, you know, narrow that vision while still maintaining the widest field of vision. But, you know, I think it will come down to those who are going to roll up their sleeves and do what, you know, very few unfortunately want to do. And that is put in a lot of hard work to reorientate maybe the ship and ensure that their teams continue to stay focused through what will undoubtedly be a tough time. But a lot of opportunities, I think, will present themselves.
You know, crises like this and the forced focus for companies that succeed or teams really changes the level of camaraderie. You know, you leave the ones that survive, they leave with a stronger unity. Okay. Maybe you could tell a story or tell us a little bit about some things from your time in the Marine Corps. I'm sure you went through some rough times, but, you know, I know that I've met some of your friends from that time of your life and you're still close. And so, you know, you build relationships in times of crisis that last the rest of your lifetime.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I could tell stories all day long about, you know, time in the military, some of them maybe not suitable here. But that being said, you know, I think about this and I think about this almost every day. And that is, you know, just how tough some of the times were, right? Most people probably think it's kind of all this high speed, low drag, you know, constantly on the move. There's so much downtime and boredom and, you know, with big swings and all sorts of things that you deal with. But, you know, the one thing, and, you know, I spoke to my team about this, you know, maybe a week or so ago, and you've probably heard me, I constantly talk about fighting complacency and allowing it to enter the building in any way, shape, or form. And so that's always, you know, top of mind. But, you know, I think back to even some of the training evolutions. I remember being in Bridgeport, California, and we were doing a summer mountain warfare training. And again, this is summer. And, you know, when you're in the mountains, you quickly realize that weather and timing and all this stuff is really just thrown out the window. Reality is summer doesn't mean a whole lot when you get to 10,000, 11,000, you know, feet. And so here we are, I think we're probably right there at about 9,000, 9,500 feet. And overnight we go from it's warm out to it is just snowing all over us, right? And we're not necessarily prepared for it. But in the back of my mind, I still remember our platoon commander and one of the instructors there at Bridgeport constantly just saying, hey, you know, Indris, let's go, right? And it was everybody in their ear. And it was this very simple, but I think very important phrase. And it was this notion of adaptability determines survivability. And we constantly heard this ringing in our ear. And, you know, we're moving through the mountains, we're crossing streams, and the water is so frigid, right? But I remember that phrase, and it was something that's carried over, and I think meant quite a bit to me. And, you know, when you think about what that means, at the time, you know, I'm a young Lance Corporal or whatever it was at the time, and I think now about what you know, how does that apply? And it was this notion of, I think what drove me then was more ego than anything else, right? It was more of a survival channel. But now is, you know, you look at teams and you think about how do you orientate them? How do you get them to be as, you know, how do you optimize the organization or even the smallest teams? And it's one of, there's this survival channel, then there's kind of this thrive channel. The thrive channel is more the cerebral, right? It's the respond. And I talk about react and respond. Ego is one of reacting, right? Responding is one of internalizing what the inputs are, recognizing, processing, you know, maybe at speed, but certainly processing. And then I think responding in a way that is appropriate for that particular point in time or that particular problem or maybe whatever the opportunity that that lies before you. But those three words have probably meant as much to me in my career as anything else. And that is constantly stressing, we got to continue to, you know, adapt to the situation, understand it for what it is, right? Don't fear it. There's really no win in fear, but learn from it, you know, adapt and certainly continue to execute down that path. But I don't know, any phrases that maybe ring true for you or any things that that you remember that you can't get away from no matter how hard you try?
Well, to be honest, when you talked about the adaptability leading to survivability, I was hoping you wouldn't stop talking very quickly because I got a little choked up when you said that. And I'm like, man, I need a minute to regain my composure. I sure hope he keeps talking for a while. Yeah, you know, you touched on something, you know, specifically with deployments and or, you know, deployed training exercises. The idle time or the downtime is a killer, you know, and yes. The thing I remember was hurry up and wait. You know, it seemed like I heard that all the time. And, you know, for many people in this stay at home situation, you know, it's felt like a deployment. I mean, you're out there with a small group of people, you're locked in the same four walls together, trying to adapt to survive. And then hopefully phase two, you begin to understand what's going on and respond and then thrive later.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was very deep for me. And I appreciate you talking about that.
Yeah. I think, as maybe a sales executive or, you know, I've always tried to be a leader in some way, shape or form, even if I didn't have the title or billet or whatever it may be. But, you know, I think about, you know, the folks who are coming up and I see the opportunities and boy, I think about all the mistakes I made, you know, and things like that, the lessons learned. And you hope to try to help people navigate these things. And even in the downtime or the tough times, or even when it's easy, right, where success is a poor teacher, right? You constantly want to help the young troops, as I call them, try to learn at an accelerated pace and try not to have to make some of the same mistakes. And I think about, you know, the folks I work with no differently than I do, you know, my own, you know, family. And that is that they're an extension to that. And it's a very personal thing for me. And that is if I can impart any part of some of the things that I've learned, both, you know, tough lessons and maybe some of the easy ones as well. You know, I think that's the highest compliment if they can take those and build upon them in their careers. And it was no different in the military, right? It was the same thing. It was, how do I transition this knowledge, right? Some of it difficult, some of it not so difficult, but how do you impart that information, this insight to them so that they can take advantage of it? I think it's something that I continue to really think about today. And I hope the folks that I work with, you know, take as much as they can from it. But, you know, all of these, you know, I think were lessons learned. Probably folks learned similar lessons in college in a variety of different ways. We've all kind of, you know, probably earned our stripes in one way or another. But it's certainly important to me when I think about some of these lessons that are certainly out there. So I was thinking the other day about, you know, when you think about the types of folks who will most succeed, maybe in the new world, right? The new world, you know, we'll assume will be more remote work than it has been historically. I think that's a safe bet. But I think it will be, you know, different types and different ways of communicating and making sure, again, that information is constantly pushed as far out to the edge of our work networks as it possibly can, so people can make these timely decisions. Now, that's an assumption on my part. But if we assume that to be true, what dawned on me the other day, and I was watching my son play Xbox with some of his buddies, right? They're not all that worried about school, not necessarily carrying on as summer apparently has already started. But, you know, I was watching the way that they communicate, and it dawned on me that millennials have probably gotten a pretty bad rap for a period of time. And it's interesting now when I think about it, I think we come out of this and you're going to see millennials raise, you know, kind of rise through the ranks pretty rapidly, because they've been communicating in, oddly enough, in a number of different ways, you know, very much over devices. A lot of these gamers, I mean, think about, they've been, you know, in their rooms or whatever the case may be, but I believe that there's an opportunity for them to probably teach us old folks who think we've learned all the lessons, knowing we haven't. But that being said, I think that we're about to see a turn of the dial where there's a lot to be learned, and the folks that have learned how to communicate at distance or over some of these devices will actually excel in this new, you know, remote workforce type mode. I don't know how you feel about that, but it just dawned on me that there may be a little turn of the dial where we see an opportunity that they may look at this and say, hey, this is my wheelhouse. I know exactly how this works, whereby maybe going into the office and doing the 8, 9, 10 hour days was not necessarily for them. They may thrive in these new world where me, I mean, this is tough for me. So I don't know. I don't know if you felt that or how you feel about maybe that that potential shift in even the type of talent that we might look for and hire in the future.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I know, you know, my oldest son, and he's, you know, 26, almost 27 now. And I can remember when he was 10, so 17 years ago.
Right.
Walking into the house, and he was in my office gaming.
Yeah.
He had three different monitors up with six different people, two per screen, from five different countries, hands-free with a headset, full video, playing games, having conversations, and working strategy on how to get through the game in a way that at the time I had no idea how to do. And I'm a senior technologist, right?
Right, right.
And those people, like you said, they've carried that. That's a natural behavior for them now. It's also natural for that part of the workforce to dissolve the lines around an eight-hour workday and just say, hey, I have work to do and I have life to do, and I'm going to do work when it needs done and do life when it needs done, and I'm going to measure myself based on results. It's an evolution that the rest of us have had to catch up to, I think. And for me, it's been challenging because having my home office a few steps away from my bedroom and no real reason to go anywhere else since I'm under lockdown and I have a pre-existing condition, so I'm high risk. You know, I found myself working 20 hours a day sometimes for no reason other than it's something to do and it's convenient. And there's no demarcation between work and home. I mean, it's just right down the hall.
Yeah, no, it's the same place, the same space. It's hard, right? I've found this the, you know, and look, full disclosure, I've always thought work from home. I'm like, come on, is that even a thing?
And you know what? That's pretty typical for sales leadership.
Boy, I have been wrong. I have seen again, and you know, at ActiveTrack, we look at productivity all the time through numerous lenses, and how can we help organizations, and obviously use the solution internally. And I have seen productivity at levels that I've never seen before. Some of it actually concerns me, right? I mean, I've got folks who are, they're working 11, 12 plus hours a day. Now, as an executive, that's become the norm for me, but you know, it's not necessarily an expectation I would have of, you know, the first year, you know, seller who's right, you know, out there, even if they're trying to make a name for themselves.
No, you're absolutely right.
There's the notion of the downtime and internalizing what did I learn today, and how do I get 1% better, you know, every single day. And you know, I hope that the speed at which we're working, somehow we don't miss the lessons and that communication of those lessons. But yeah, it's been a very, very wild thing to watch. And certainly having the ability to measure it has been, you know, even more eye-opening for me.
You know, as a senior technologist or a, you know, capital geek as the podcast is called, but you know, if I'm a geek, it's certainly a technical one. There's been a lot in the news about certain technologies, Zoom, for example, and WebEx, Slack, MS Teams, and you know, the dramatic growth. I think Zoom said they went from 20,000 simultaneous users to like 200,000 or something, or whatever the number was. It was like 20x growth. What we haven't heard a lot about are products like ActiveTrack that can help you with workforce and productivity analytics. Sure. And I use ActiveTrack for myself at home. You know, you guys were gracious enough to grant me a license. And what I've noticed, that's how I knew I had a problem, because I went back and looked at the previous week's data and I'm like, why am I working 17 and 18 hours a day? Like, no one's even asking me to do anything.
Right.
You know, we're an investment capital, a VC firm. We're not writing checks right now. We're waiting to see what the economy does. Right. And so, but there's this drive, this feeling of help. And I haven't talked to a single person who's taken vacation time in the last 2 or 3 months, because we're all just so concerned about making sure we're there to help our teams, to help our companies. But I'd love to shift a little bit. We're almost out of time towards technology, because I don't think most organizations realize that there are products like ActiveTrack out there that can help them really understand what their teams are working on, how they're getting work done. And if you wouldn't mind just talking a little bit about, you know, the technology and what that kind of product can provide to people.
Yeah, for sure. You know, without making it a huge advertisement.
Yeah, no one wants a sales pitch, but this is a technology that people
exactly
people,
right,
people don't know that is available.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I think at the center of everything that I've done throughout my career, it's always been, you know, early days at Dell, right? There was, you know, on the surface, you would look at it and say, well, these guys sell computers. That's awesome. Build to order. Well, that wasn't really the business, right? There was so many businesses inside the business, right? Dell Financial Services gave immense operating leverage to the organization based on, you know, their ability to either take a credit card or finance things over time. And the reality is that float on cash and how they paid their suppliers, that was the business. How they trained their employees, right, to work methodically. And it was so programmatic, and every little movement, right, had real material meaning and purpose, right? And they understood it. And again, we were young, right? This is an organization that was largely run by folks learning on the fly. And this is why I always think, boy, what an opportunity for some of the folks coming up, even with this massive reset. But you know, the reason I bring this up is when I found ActiveTrack, it was one that really, I think, spoke to me, because it harps on how do we improve productivity for the individual, for the team, right, for the organization, and how do we make sure it's aligned with the right sets of principles, right? I think if we're lucky, we've worked with teams or leaders, certainly, hopefully we'll work with executives where principles were that kind of guiding light. It gave us, you know, extreme focus and an understanding of what we were trying to do and the way at which we wanted to do it. But look, I am a firm believer that what will remain consistent regardless of the technologies will be that our people are everything. So giving them the insight, giving them visibility into how they spend their time. Some of it good, right? Some of it not so good. But a lot of it is not about, you know, bad intent. What it really is people just they haven't visualized their day, right? They work through their day. But I see folks who, like you just said, may work 11, 12 hours, but 3 of those hours are spent either looking for information, at which as leaders, we owe it to our people to put information, like I continue to say, in their hands at the edge so that they can make informed decisions. But all too often, they're looking for things. They don't know how to use the apps. They're not quite sure on what the next step is, whatever the process may be. And again, this affects organizations in a massive, massive way. And candidly, while we don't see it, these are real dollars that exit the building. And we're not going to save our way out of this, you know, this new world order. We're going to have to execute. We're going to have to work on how do we drive this thing as fast as we can and climb back to where we were. And, you know, that productivity element is the center of all of it. So, again, I know you brought up the technologies themselves, but I see kind of, you know, 2 real issues. How do we continue to make sure people are informed as much as they possibly can? And, you know, in these highly centralized type organizations, they're going to have to release a little bit of that and understand that the real power is in empowering their people, ensuring that they have the information to make timely decisions, because time is what we will all be challenged with, and certainly taking advantage of coming out the other side of this. And on the flip side is kind of this understanding of kind of shared consciousness, right? And that is, how closely can we work together despite the fact we may not be, you know, at the water cooler or having those hallway conversations. And it will be, how do we leverage the technology for good and not somehow find ourselves exhausted by it, right? These Zoom meetings, for example, have gotten me I've read about the fatigue and I feel it all the time, but we've got to find a way to marry these back into, you know, that work life, if you will, to where they really are optimized in a way to help our teams. And at the end of the day, again, it's all about teams, and it's all about how efficient, how effective, how productive can they be. And I think these are great technologies. I'm not confident that we found the way to best utilize them, but I am confident that, you know, with products like ActiveTrack, we will be able to help organizations best align their people with the technologies to get the most, you know, I think, pronounced outcome that they possibly can. So that's what I'm excited about anyway.
And Justin, you're one of the strongest and one of my favorite leaders I've worked with in my lifetime. And, you know, as I took a few notes on what you said, you know, visibility leads to awareness, and awareness drives adaptability. Adaptability leads to survivability, which allows you to understand, respond, and thrive in the situation that you're at. And it's how quickly organizations move through that process. Where do they get the visibility so they can have the awareness of what's really happening around them? How do they use that information to then adapt towards survival? And what's interesting to me is, as I've talked to companies, you talk to teams that are in each of these phases. know, for some organizations that were made up of young teams that were always working remote from day one, they didn't have to adapt very much. So surviving wasn't a problem. They were able to focus on their customers very, very rapidly and start to thrive. For other organizations, maybe they were able to adapt quickly, but you can't really adapt until you have visibility into how people are working. I use this product all the time, and I experienced the Zoom fatigue that you mentioned. I posted on LinkedIn the other day. In one single day, I used 5 different platforms for video conferencing.
Right.
And that's just one day, you know, Zoom, WebEx, you know, Slack, MS Teams. I don't remember what they all were. This has really been a fun episode to record with you, Justin. And I just want to thank you for making the time out of your day. I know you worked more hours than anyone should. I know you're extremely dedicated to your profession and your team, and your leadership is genuinely appreciated. And thank you so much for your service and for stopping by today.
Absolutely. Great to chat, and look forward to maybe closing with a hug sometime soon, man.
Sounds
great,
man.
Good to hear from you.
You too.
That's it, everyone, and thank you for joining Capital Geek. Subscribe via Apple, Stitcher, or any platform where you usually find fantastic podcasts. Tune in again soon for another great episode of Capital Geek.